ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। ॐ आप्यायन्तु ममाङ्गानि वाक्प्राणश्चक्षुः श्रोत्रमथो बलमिन्द्रियाणि च सर्वाणि सर्वं ब्रह्मोपनिषदम् माहं ब्रह्म निराकुर्याम् मा ब्रह्म निराकरोत् अनिराकरणमस्त्व निराकरणम् मे अस्तु। तदात्मनि निरतेयोपनिषत्सु धर्माः ते मयि सन्तु ते मयि सन्तु। ॐ शान्ति 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 हरिः। ॐ ॐ मे मै लिम्स् स्पीच् वैटल् फोर्स् ऐस् इयर्स् एज़ आल्सो स्ट्रेंथ एंड ऑल दि ऑर्गन्स बिकम वेल डेवलप्ड। Everything is the Brahman revealed in the Upanishads. May I not deny Brahman? May not Brahman deny me? Let there be no spurning of me by Brahman. Let there be no rejection of Brahman by me. May all the virtues that are spoken of in the Upanishads repose in me, who am engaged in the pursuit of the Self. May they repose in me. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. When we took up this study of the Chandogya Upanishad, mainly we had focused upon chapters 6, 7 and 8, which respectively deal with the Sat aspect of Brahma, Ananda aspect of Brahma and the Chit aspect of Brahma. Chapter 6 focuses on Sat, chapter 7 on Ananda, and chapter 8 on Chit or Self-Knowledge, Brahma-Vidya. But Chandogya Upanishad in total contains 8 chapters. Of these, if we exclude from 6, 7 and 8 chapters, 5 chapters remain, 1, 2, 5. And these chapters, there are marvelous stories, upasanas, special contemplations. We have seen some of them. Today, we are going to take up a most important vidya called Pancha Agni Vidya. Pancha Agni Vidya. What this particular vidya, which occurs in the 5th chapter, 3rd section until the 10th section, 3rd to 10th section of the 5th chapter of the Chandogya Upanishad focuses upon this Pancha Agni Vidya. There are several important points we have to keep in mind before we go to the original. First of all, unlike today's claim that Brahmins were the originators, that is the sages, Brahmin sages like Vasishtha, Bharadvaja, etc., they were the real discoverers of truth. But no, the Upanishad pointedly refers to some Kshatriyas who have discovered equally well. That is what Swami Vivekananda wants to tell us. Each soul is potentially divine. Everyone has the same divinity in full, in infinity. When Swamiji refers to potentiality, it doesn't mean smallness. It means we are not aware of who we really are. That's all it means. So we have to bring up that self-knowledge, true self-knowledge. At any given time, we have self-knowledge. But that self-knowledge is, I am the body, I am my possessions, and I am the mind. There is an order in this. first comes the crudest identification, I am the possessions. Second comes a bit higher, nevertheless binding, I am the body. And then comes, I am the mind. But as we have seen, there are higher truths are there. The real spiritual practice starts when we reach, we identify first of all, I am the mind, which is a very high spiritual state. And then only we get a glimpse of the next peak of mountain, which we have to ascend. And that is called Atmajnanam. That is why it is called Avastha-traya. Avastha-traya means three types of experiences each jiva goes through, but the Atman is beyond these three experiences. It is called Chaturtha or fourth experience, or it is called Turiya-avastha, but these are all for understanding all the time. There is only one true avastha, that is, I am Brahman, even though we are not aware of it. But the purpose of life, in fact, the very creation is, as the commentators really emphasize, is for this self-realization only. So, Bhagavad Gita, as we have seen, is the very essence of all the Upanishads. As if Bhagavan Krishna had brought together all the best cows. That is, every Upanishad is compared to a great cow. Sarvo Upanishado Gavo Dogdha Gopalanandanaha Partho Vatsaha Sudhihi Bhokta Dogdham Gitamritam Mahat. So therein also, especially in the at the end of the second chapter, Bhagavan Krishna says, each one of us, we have to attain the goal of life, which is called to become Sthita Prajna, Sthira Prajna, or Atmajnana, or Brahma Vidya, Brahma Jnana, Aham Brahmasmi. And for that purpose, we have to do certain activity, which is called spiritual effort, spiritual practice. And that is indicated from third chapter onwards. It is said in a popular way, second chapter outlines what is, who are you, what is the goal of life, and how to attain it. From third chapter onwards until the 17th chapter, an exposition, an explanation, an expansion of this idea that we get in the second chapter. And then the 18th chapter is a recollection, an essence, a summary of what from 3rd to 17th chapters really outline, finally bringing that one who follows this methodology must end up by becoming a knower of Brahman. That is called moksha, that is called Tadvishnoho Paramam Padam, the supreme abode of Lord Vishnu. So, every Upanishad teaches directly or indirectly. 6th, 7th and 8th chapters we have seen the direct teaching of Brahma Vidya, taking the three aspects of the Nirvachana, definition of Brahman, Sat, Ananda and Chit. But several spiritual practices had to be undertaken in order to get that adhikara, yogyata, fitness to become an adhikari. The Sanskrit word adhikari means to become fit, whereas in normal terminology, somebody has become a district collector or MP, MLA, a minister, they are called adhikaris or a police officer, etc. No, adhikari means a person who has become fit, and an adhikari should possess the fourfold qualities as magnanimously explained by Shankaracharya in his Viveka Chudamani, Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampannaha. By the nine qualities one has to develop, even though it is all outlined in four words. Viveka, Vairagya, Shamadamadi Shatka Sampatti, and finally Mumukshutva. And slowly, as we become purified, as we progress in spiritual life means progress in purity. Progress in purity means gradual detachment from the possessions first, from the idea that I am the body, then lastly, from the idea that I am the mind. That is why yoga has been so beautifully defined. Yogaha chitta vritti nirodhaha. So there are umpteen number of vidyas. Vidya in general is translated as knowledge. But there is a specific meaning. Vidya means upasana. Upasana is a way of attempting to approach nearer and nearer to God. That is called upasana. We have already discussed several upasanas, and in this today, from today onwards, they are going to take up a most marvelous, as I said, very important upasana. It is called Pancha Agni Upasana, a contemplation on the five fires. What does it mean? Where does it occur? In the fifth chapter of the Chandogya Upanishad, from third section onwards until the practically tenth section. So, the story of Pancha Agni Vidya or the doctrine of the five fires is about, there was a king, he was called Pravahana Jaivali, and he is teaching the sage Gautama, and along with his son, probably Shvetaketu, the knowledge of birth, rebirth, and the journey of the soul from birth to mukti. Now, very interesting, we have seen in this very Chandogya Upanishad, in the sixth chapter, the son of this Gautama, Aruni, that is Shvetaketu, he studied for 12 years, returned home, very proud, arrogant, absolutely thinking, I am the best among the students. There is nothing that I have not excelled. No branch of knowledge I have not excelled compared to other students. He was swelled with pride. And the father was a knower of Brahman, like the Varuna, who was the father of Bhrigu. In the third chapter of the Taittiriya Upanishad, we get who was a knower of Brahman. Several of these rishis were grand knowers of Brahma Vidya. That's why they are called rishis. So, this father asks, we have seen in details, have you learned that by which one can cross birth and rebirth, birth and death? And proudly, Shvetaketu replies, sir, certainly my teacher did not know. Had he known, he would have taught me. Meaning that my teacher is a very ignorant person and he did not teach me, because whatever I am fit to learn. Even if I am not fit, so I am fit to learn whatever, because the teacher may be fit, may not be fit. Indirectly he was telling, my teacher did not know anything about it. Then gently his pride was shattered, and then he became humble. Please teach me. And then the father teaches. The same Shvetaketu story again comes in this Pancha Agni Vidya with one twist. Here there was a Pancha Agni Vidya. Once this Shvetaketu, he approached one great king who was a Brahmagnani. He was called Pravahana Jaivali. And then this king immediately understood. And then he asked, do you know where people go after death? Do you know why the other world is never filled completely? Do you know how a dead person is again reborn? So, in the form of a series of questions, which we will take up when the time comes, Shvetaketu was asked. And Shvetaketu not only did not know the answers, he did not know such questions could even arise. interesting part of the story is, he became very haughty. I am a Brahmana, and this king is questioning me, and I could not answer. This arrogant king is one of the worst kings in the whole world. He is a Rajanya Bandhu in Sanskrit. Anybody says, is Brahmana Bandhu. Brahma Bandhu means he is a Bandhu, means a friend. So he is a friend of Brahmana. But the real meaning is, it's a ridiculous term, saying that he is born as a Brahmana, but he doesn't have the qualities of a Brahmana. Similarly, Rajanya Bandhu, he is a king, but he is the worst of the kings. He doesn't have any good quality. He should have respected me. And then he returns to his father, who was called Gautama, and he says, somehow I don't know why I went. And this worthless king, he asked me these questions. I never heard even the question. I don't know anything about the questions, let alone the answers. Father, you tell me. Father was a great person, a very humble person. The greater a person, the greater the humility. And actually, all great people, they are open-minded people. As even Sri Ramakrishna says, so long as I live, so long I learn. I can learn from anybody. May not be Brahma Vidya. I can learn even from a child many things. That openness, that humility, that in this world, God is manifesting through many people, and there may be any number of greater people than me. That humility of seeing the greatness of the Mahima, the glory of Bhagavan everywhere, and is humble enough to acknowledge it, to sit at their feet and learn. That's a great quality. So, but Gautama says, even I do not know about this knowledge. I want to learn because he's a great learned person. I don't care whether he is a king or a Shudra or anybody. Swami Vivekananda was considered a Shudra. He was insulted at Madras by Brahmins. How did he become a sannyasi? So, not only in America, but even in India, Swami Vivekananda was insulted. Even now there are people who write books about Vivekananda. He was a glutton and he mixed with women, not knowing what he did to India. Not only these people are ungrateful for what Swami Vivekananda, the great Swami Vivekananda did, and is still inspiring people everywhere. Anyway, this is also the Mahamaya of this creation. We have to accept all sorts of people will be there. So this Gautama Rishi, we do not know whether Shvetaketu agreed to accompany his father or not, humbly approached this Pravahana Javali, and then he humbly accepted the position of a student and then learnt. Seeing the humility of Gautama Rishi, this king had no hesitation, because the great people have only one qualification they look for in the students. Are they students? Are you a student? Are you eager to study? Are you eager to learn? That's all. And once they find an eager person, fit person of course, then unhesitatingly they will teach. The whole gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, for most of the time, it is to non-Brahmins that Sri Ramakrishna had taught. There were also, of course, some Brahmins were there, but Sri Ramakrishna never made any distinction. Holy Mother never refused anybody. Only because of the village customs, she had to feed the Amjad, the Muslim devotee, even though he was a highway robber. But he was not by nature a highway robber, because when the pangs of hunger start burning a person for the maintenance of the family, etc., one has to humbly sit and do whatever is necessary. First comes Pranadharana. I also mentioned during my talks how Vishwamitra went and stole some dried flesh which was hanging in the backyard of a chandala, the lowest of the caste. And there was a beautiful conversation between Vishwamitra and then this chandala. Sir, is it not wrong that you steal being a rishi? Then the substance of the conversation is, first comes pranarakshana. I have to be alive. Whether I want to be a worldly person, or a spiritual person, or a good person, or an evil person, the very first condition is, I have to be alive, I have to be healthy. So when famines come, or wars come, how much of injustice is still going on, that ordinary people caught between two warring nations, they suffer so much, children die by the thousands, and yet they have no compassion. Big countries do not even look at them. If you study the history of any country, you will see how much of evil is ruling this world. There are also, of course, equally good people. There is no doubt about it. But study of history should awaken us to the fact that most of our lives are nothing but pure evil. Sometimes inactive selfishness, many times active selfishness. That is all the difference. A fellow, for example, may steal 1 rupee because his capacity is that much. But if he had the capacity, he would not hesitate to kill billions of pounds, bank, heist, etc., etc. Anyway, I don't want to go into all those things. What is important is that knowledge, Mother Saraswati, will be bestowing her grace upon any person who has acquired the qualifications, and our scriptures outline those qualifications very nicely, that what is the purpose, prayojana, are you an adhikari, and what is the subject in which you want to excel, and what is the prayojana, what are you going to get. So these are called anubandha chatushtaya, and we have to ask. We are only listening, we are only reading, but we have to ask, am I reading because, am I an adhikari, am I seeking this prayojana? Lot of energy will be saved if we ask ourselves those questions. Coming back to our story, so the story of this Panchagni Vidya. Agni means fire, Pancha means five. So the upasana called five fires, contemplation on the five fires. What is it? So the king, seeing that Gautama was very humble, we are not sure whether Shvetaketu accompanied him or not. The king, instantaneously finding Gautama, very eager student, an adhikari, explains that the universe in which we live is a large sacrificial fire where every soul is undergoing 5 stages of transformation, birth, and then living for some time, then death. What happens for this person who goes, where does he go? What does he do? How long does he stay? And then how does he return back? These are the marvelous questions each one of us must question, because indirectly or even directly, it tells us there is no death. What is called mrityu or death is only one stage in the evolutionary scale of life. So after death, the jiva, giving up, of course, this physical body, which is like a dress, worn out dress. Worn out means not fit to be worn, which means it cannot do any more karma, especially fit karma, excepting becoming a burden to the family and to the whole society. Then he goes according to his merit. This is one of the fundamental foundations of Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism and Sikhism, that we had many past lives and we will have many future lives. This evolution goes on until one day we wake up, we approach the great ones. humbly sit at their feet, learn the goal of life and about our nature, and practice spiritual disciplines and realize who we are, then only we attain mukti or freedom. That is the subject matter. So this story also highlights that this knowledge previously is unknown to Brahmins. It was passed down by a king who was a realized soul. And what does this Panchagni Vidya really wants to convey? So this Panchagni Vidya, the knowledge of the five fires, illustrates the interconnectedness of the cosmos. The whole universe is interconnected. How is it interconnected? Each one of us, we become human beings. Until then, evolution helps us to develop the instruments which are the panchakoshas, or three bodies necessary for our final journey, spiritual journey. And that is when human life starts. And once we become human beings, we are given a very special privilege called viveka, the capacity to look at ourselves objectively. What is viveka? Usually translated as discrimination, but it also can mean discernment. Some people prefer this word discerning. Doesn't matter, because the word discrimination is a quite bad name. What is called gender discrimination, class discrimination, educational discrimination, etc., etc., or even wealth discrimination. There are some clubs where only billionaires and millionaires. I am not aware whether there is exclusive billionaires club, but at least millionaires club is there. Only anybody who becomes a millionaire is fit if he wants to join that club. Anyway, so once a person becomes human being, he acquires very special capacity, which is called a faculty of viveka. There is no equivalent English word there, only Sanskrit word. What is viveka? The capacity to look at oneself objectively and to study oneself. That is called viveka. So, from then onwards, it takes many lives to get over the fascination, the illusion of artha and kama, and then enter into dharma, and then slowly progress. Spiritual life starts only with the acquisition of dharma. Until that time, however much we try to control our artha and kama, our wealth and our enjoyment, it is not going to help us progress in life. So slowly we progress in life, and the more progress we make, the more dharmic we become. Dharmic means to become pure. Purity means to gradually acquire detachment from all the three possessions, body and mind. What do we mean by possessions? That I do not become, or one doesn't become proud, I am a billionaire, or regret, I am only a poor man, I am a tramp, like that. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Then body. I am young, I am healthy, I am strong, I can suppress other people, I can do whatever I like, there is nobody who can stand up to me. This is one kind of attachment. But even that I am healthy, I am not healthy, that also do what best one has to do, controlling one's desires, eating properly, etc., that is absolutely fine. But in spite of that, however, we hear stories that those who are exclusively devoted to exercise and healthy diet, suddenly while running they have a heart attack and they die. Generally it is good to observe these rules, but they don't guarantee a long and healthy life, because accidents can happen, our prarabdha karma can catch up with us, or we can die at any given moment, as we discussed many times, jati, ayo, and bhoga. And then coming to the mind, that person doesn't respect me. This person, he loves me. However bad this person, evil this person is, I don't care. He loves me, that is enough for me. This kind of attachments must be dropped. I don't care who loves me, who doesn't love me. I want to know whether that person is a good person or not such a good person. That is all that I care about in life. Nothing else. So this is how we will have to progress. The more dharmic we become, the more we follow the scriptures, that is how we become dharmic. Dharmic means to become pure. Purity means detachment. And then to the extent we become pure, to that extent we have better and better glimpse of what is called our true nature. The scriptures unfold their meaning only when we become purer and purer. So, there is nothing called death. That is the main point. And then, what is the whole universe is meant as a school. As Swami Vivekananda had said, that life is a school. The whole universe is a school for us to learn lessons. That is the one answer Swamiji had given. Second answer, life is a gymnasium. Once we learn what we have to do, what we have to avoid, is like going to a gymnasium and then do what the instructor asks us to do, gradually develop our dharmic muscles, discriminatory muscles, become dharmic person. That is called usually associated with grihastashrama. Grihastashrama doesn't mean only a married life. Grihastashrama means where we learn or where we practice, like a scientist practices in the laboratory, puts his theories into practice. So where we practice what we ought to do, experiment, experience, enjoy, become purified and move forward. And then once we learn our lessons and we can use artha kama, they will not master us anymore. They will not be sitting on our head and driving us, but we will become their masters. And then we move on to the third answer Swamiji had given. We become free. That's what he meant. Life is a circus. You go to circus. I go to circus. What for? To enjoy the tumbling about. All the wonderful actions they do. But it is better than circus. Because circus is real. People can fall down. People can get injured. But I would say, watch a drama. Watch a cinema. And then, even better, sit down in a easy chair and go on imagining with full awareness that this is my imagination only. It has nothing to do with reality. So this is how life becomes. And for that purpose, according to our karma, we go to other worlds, experience the result. So the other world can be a lower world, maybe this very earth somewhere, or maybe what is called the six higher worlds, counting from above earth, from Bhuvar Loka to Suvar Loka, etc. And then at the end they have to return back. So what is the main point? First, there is nothing called death. It is only a travel. So one train is given up. We enter into another train. Meanwhile, we may stay for some time in one place, gather on experiences. But ultimately, we have to come down. And how do we come down? That is what very graphically, very illustrative way. That is why it is called Pancha Agni Vidya. Every returning soul passes through five fires before one is reborn. That is why it is called Pancha Agni Vidya. And incidentally, the last fifth fire is called a woman or our mother. Why is it called fifth fire? Because our Purana sometimes graphically describe what happens to a baby inside the womb. Can't move. Maybe he is a highly developed soul. Maybe he has knowledge better than one's own parents. But so long as inside the womb, so he cannot move. And he is surrounded by all unpleasant odors. For everything has to depend. He also gives trouble to mother, etc. How much mother has to go through, only every mother knows. Even though she puts up with it, because once the baby is born, then the woman feels, I am highly fulfilled because I want to be called mother. The desire of every woman is to be called a mother. And when a child wholeheartedly cries, Mama, not uncle, Ma, means philosophically, you are not my mother, divine mother is my mother. But you know, in Western countries, Mama, here we call Amma, Ma. And then her heart swells with joy. This is my child, this is me. Father's heart also, it expands. This is me. So this is how the story goes. So the first point, that there is no real death, is only giving up one useful instrument when it becomes worn out, and we want to get a new instrument, just as a person gives up worn out to dress and then moves to the second one. What is the second lesson? The whole universe is nothing but a huge sacrifice, and that is what so beautifully illustrated in the form of 12 sacrifices in the 4th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, of which the culmination is called Brahma Karma Samadhi. Brahma Arpanam Brahma Havihi Brahma Gnau Brahmana Hutam Brahma Eva Tena Gantavyam Brahma Karma Samadhina. That is, everything is Brahman. It is the God who is creating himself, who is recreating himself, who is playing with himself in the form of birth, death, etc. Mayadhyakshena prakruti suyate sacharacharam hetuna anena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. So, is Bhagavan dreaming, consciously dreaming, not uncontrollably dreaming, consciously dreaming and thoroughly enjoying as Sakshi. On one side, he is also undergoes happiness and unhappiness. On the other side, he remains as the witness of everything that happens. We have been discussing those points umpteen number of times. So this Panchagnivinaya says, the whole universe is nothing but only a great sacrifice. The whole Vishwa, the whole universe, the whole Srishti, made up of the three gunas, is nothing but a huge fire sacrifice that is going on. So, that is what we want to tell. That is the second thing. What is the third thing that we have to learn from this superb tale? That until and unless we also convert our life into a sacrifice, we will not enjoy real happiness. This is beautifully outlined, I think, in the 8th section of the 2nd chapter, Ananda Mimamsa. What is important in this Ananda Mimamsa? That unimaginably greater happiness will be available in the higher lokas. But that's not the important point. Important point is Shrotriyaha Shrotriyasya cha Akamahatasya. Even a human being, even he may be the poorest of the poor, but if he has got vairagyam and faith in God, faith in the scriptures are one and the same thing. So if a person has got faith in scriptures, it is only faith in God. That is called Shrotriyatvam. And then once we have faith, many times I discussed, whatever we feel that this is real, our actions, our reactions follow our conviction that what is real. If somebody feels that this is nectar, even though it is a poison, he would drink unhesitatingly. Later on only, he is going to experience the effects. But if somebody believes this is poison, then even if it be nectar, he will not drink it. So our conviction is the guide which makes us do and not do, act and react. And we act and react according to our concept of what is real, what is unreal. And that reality is what is called conviction, faith. Faith means this is the real thing. I know we have discussed this point, but we have to discuss, keep it in our mind again and again. So, in brief, before we go, what are those five fires? Very briefly, but I want to dwell upon it even longer time, but this is just the summary and introduction. So, this doctrine of Panchagni Vidya explains the cycle of birth and rebirth as a series of sacrificial fires. Going to the higher loka is one type of sacrifice. Remaining there and experiencing another type of sacrifice. And slowly, at the exhaustion of the karma phala, it is another sacrifice. How it is happened? So there are five stages. Each stage is called a fire. And what is the first fire? It is called Swarga. Swarga means other world, not necessarily higher world. Because if somebody is evil, he will also be punished. Punishment is meant for purifying, not for really making him suffer. So this is called Swarga Loka. So the sun, the sacred stick, Samvit, its rays are the smoke, the day the flame, the moon is the ember, and the stars the sparks. The soul becomes a jiva and enters Swarga Loka, provided, of course, he practices what the scripture tells. Second fire is called rain. What happens at the end of the Swarga Loka? When does the Swarga Loka end? When the karma phala or punya phala comes to an end. So the wind, this is called vayu, the sacred stick. The clouds, the smoke, lightning, the flame, thunder, the charcoal, and its roars, the sparks, is the description of the rain. The soul is the oblation, which becomes soma, and then enters the clouds in the form of rains. That is the second fire, rain. Third fire is earth. The ear is the sacred stick. The sky, akasha, is the smoke. The night, the flame, and the directions, the sparks. The oblation is rain, which upon reaching the earth, grows into food. A very natural phenomena. So from the sky, first cloud formation is there, then rain pours in, and that rain enters into the earth. Without that rain water, there is no food. That is why we have seen, whenever there is a thunder, lightning, and clouds, every being's heart lights up saying, we are going to have plenty of food. Joyously they cry. Then fourth fire is man, Purusha, human being. Speech is the sacred stick, prana is the smoke, the tongue is the flame, and the eyes are the embers. The oblation is food, because that food, that rain, which comes in the clouds become the rain. Rain becomes the food, and the food is eaten by the Purusha, and the oblation is food, which becomes semen in the male. And that semen, in the sacred yajna called marriage, is poured into the fire called woman. So the fifth fire is called woman. The woman is the fire. Semen is the oblation offered to her, into her womb, from which the fetus is born. After about 9 months or so, this is the aspect. That is how the jiva is reborn, and according to the previous punya, papa, etc., which details, marvelous details, we will talk about in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। मे श्री रामकृष्ण होली मदर एंड स्वामी विवेकानंद ब्लेस अस ऑल विद भक्ति। जय रामकृष्ण।